Kevin,
are you going to start every show off going, tax season?
No,
come on.
It was
dude.
The nachos I ate.
No. We know it's bad time for tax season. You're lucky you can do this.
Yes. You know what? The tax survive tax season or the podcast?
Yeah. That's a question.
Nope. Yeah, so just stay away from the nachos when you haven't slept. Bad idea. But what's going on, my friend?
Nothing much. I'm looking forward to, there's a band I'm going to go see live this week up in Buford, Georgia, called the Red Dragon Cartel. They're the new band formed by legendary guitarist Jakey Lee, who used to be the guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne, and he replaced, I believe it was Randy Rhoads after he passed away in the plane crash, who we just recently celebrated that anniversary, unfortunately, of his death. And then he went on to form a band, which I really enjoyed, that kind of broke out during the hair metal genre, called Badlands, which I really liked. And he made it into my top list of underrated guitar players that I did that episode with Johnny K for the Hair Metal podcast.
I don't know what that band title sounds like. They might be members of the Yakuza.
I'm looking forward to seeing him play live again. It's been like almost 30 years the last time I saw him. So this will be interesting.
I keep meaning to ask you because there's a guitarist I'm really enjoying right now. Nita Strauss. Are you familiar with her?
Nita Strauss.
She's been
the name sounds familiar.
She's mostly been known for being the guitarist for Alice Cooper.
Oh, okay.
But she just put out her own album a few months ago, and it's really good.
Yeah.
So I you being the guitar man, I encourage you to go check it out.
I will. That sounds cool, man.
But you know, I feel like something major is happening at the stroke of midnight tonight, Kevin. This is something big, something that's going to change the landscape of fandom forever. Like something becomes official.
Disney Fox merger?
That might be what it was. I was thinking it was more of that, like Atari ColecoVision merger finally happening after all these years.
What's that going to do?
Who knows? But you know what? We got a lot to talk about that actually is going to be very interesting. So without further ado, I am fine from tax season. Let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
Yes, we are at Culture Clash number 123, and of course, Culture Clash is your home for fandom news, reviews, and whatever comes out of Kevin and I's head this week, and who knows what that could be. But, you know, if you want to listen to all of it, the best place to start is at our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. If you're using a mobile device, of course, use the Podbean app and just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Again, just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Visit our Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network, or you can email us directly. Let us know what you think of what we're doing. Just email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network or on Twitter at FanPod Network. Of course, you can follow me, Kyle, on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can people follow you on social media?
Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
Of course, too, if you would like some great Fandom Podcast Network gear, I'll get it right yet. You visit our TeePublic store. Go to teepublic.com and search the Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find all the great shirts, mugs, tapestries, whatever else, with all the logos of the great shows here at the Fandom Podcast Network. And rumor has it there might be a sale soon. I'm just saying. And, of course, we'd also love your feedback, and we love it on iTunes especially. We, of course, love those 5-star reviews. In fact, Kevin, I believe you require them. Do you not?
Require what? I'm sorry?
Those 5-star reviews.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And but you know, we love feedback in general. We love to know how we're doing. So, Kevin, we are on the prefaces of the merger, the thing we have that's been kind of hovering all of us over all of us for the last about year now.
Yes.
This is a pretty huge deal.
Are we talking about this now, or are we going to wait till later? There's like a list of stuff.
We're going to talk about. I just want to get your thoughts, you know, as just real quick, because is there something you're looking forward to with this? Just initially.
Obviously the X-Men and Fantastic Four, I want to see them brought into the MCU. I think that would be great. Or at least hopefully done properly. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious about the original rights to the original Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah.
No. The video and theatrical rights. I'm wondering if finally we're going to see a release to Blu-ray of the uncut Star Wars movies before the special editions came out. If we're finally going to see something like that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest questions of this merger.
If you want to cash grab Disney, there you go.
Well, they're cash grabbing everything else Star Wars these days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, with that, let's really get into this story. Kevin, are you feeling it?
Let's news.
Let's news.
You know, I'm kind of feeling that our energy here is a little low, Kevin. And so before we start talking Disney Fox, I know how to perk you up. Because, Kevin, it's wiggity, 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 wick time.
Dude, you stole my thunder.
I was trying to just give you a good boost there, man. Sorry.
It's wiggity, 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 wick time. Yes, John Wick update, dude. This Thursday, week of, was it the 19th? What day is that going to be then? Is that going to be the 21st, I think? Yes, the 21st. We'll be getting a new John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum trailer dropping Thursday. So I'm guessing that this is going to be the final trailer that we'll get before the actual movie comes out, with the exception of maybe some 30-second shorts and stuff like that. So I'm excited. I could definitely be in the mood for another trailer. Really curious about that. But if you want some more updates and some interesting stuff, go to IGN.com. They have been I signed up for like updates for this, and IGN has been pretty good about putting some cool stuff. If you're interested in more John Wick news, what do you think? Are you excited?
I'm getting there. There's a lot happening between now and then that I'm really excited for too. Avengers Endgame, for instance. Game of Thrones series 7 debut. I mean, April's a packed month.
You're right, eight.
April's a packed month, and we have Celebration, which means we're going to start seeing hopefully some major Star Wars stuff in the news, as far as maybe a trailer for The Mandalorian.
Yeah, April before May. I gotcha.
So, the Disney-Fox merger is officially complete, and there's a lot very interesting things that are coming with this, Kevin.
You skipped a story. Are we coming back?
We're coming
to that?
Back to that. I want to get into this because this is a big deal. I mean, I am legitimately excited about this because there's so much in the toy box now for Disney, and I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this. What I do know from what I've read is that basically anything that's still in production of 21st Century Fox now, as far as movies go, will be allowed to be finished up, and it will be released under the Disney brand or as 21st Century Fox is a subsidiary of Disney. So what I'm curious about is they haven't said what's going to happen once all these movies that are in production now get finished. Do you have any thoughts? Do you think 21st Century Fox is just going to kind of fade away, Kevin?
That's a good question. I don't know if they'll be fade away unless just kind of consumed and then brought into the Disney umbrella. The name itself, I could see them keeping the name.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, a little, there's just, a lot of history.
Just that it's a Disney company, just like Lucasfilm is still around and it's a Disney company. Yeah, there's a long history with that. I don't see why that they wouldn't just keep, you know, just like Disney owns ESPN, ESPN keeps their name, so I don't see why not.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I sit back and look where Disney stands, and, you know, it's exciting in the aspect we know Disney's working on the streaming. The rumor is they're going to open up the entire vault and put it out on the streaming service, which I think is absolutely amazing. Now, of course, we've got everything that was at 21st Century Fox, but we also look at what Disney is doing going forward just with their own products. I mean, we do have Avengers coming out. We have everything with Star Wars. And we got the trailer today, too, for Toy Story 4, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not excited about this?
I was feeling the exact same thing and still am after seeing it. I am not excited. That trailer did nothing for me.
I mean,
it's sad to say because the last three movies, you know, were good and I got excited about them. I don't know. I mean, maybe it just I wasn't asking for a Toy Story 4, but I didn't. If you're going to do it, that's fine. But I was kind of hoping to see something a little more interesting from the trailer.
Yeah, it kind of felt like to me Woody's having a mid-toy crisis.
Yeah, I didn't see much of Buzz in that trailer either. No, you know,
it was very Woody-centric in this spork toy thing, and the carnival setting that they're showing in the trailer could be interesting for some interesting scenes. But I think I'm with you, Kevin. Why are we getting this film? We ended on such a high note with Toy Story 3, and that just felt like such good closure. And it feels like this coming out with Toy Story 4 is kind of going to be dampening what we had from Toy Story 3.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't asking for a Toy Story 4. So it's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just a money thing, or maybe they're trying to open it up. Maybe they're trying to open it up to a new generation as well. I could see that as a benefit to get people to want to go back and watch the originals and stuff. But you know, I don't see this cast coming back for a 5. I could be wrong on that. Money talks, of course. But yeah, I'm just not excited, man. I don't know why.
I'm just not feeling it either. But speaking of sequels that might not actually be sequels, of course, the big news that we talked about when we had our Marvel special just come out over the weekend was James Gunn is obviously back with Disney, back with Marvel, but he is still going to direct The Suicide Squad. It's not Suicide Squad 2. It's the Suicide Squad. And it's been said now that this movie will be a complete and total reboot, Kevin.
Why?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, this is just more of why Warner Brothers and DC Films is just a mess.
I mean, you're getting Margot Robbie back, right?
That's the rumor, but nothing's official on that. We know Idris Elba is playing Deadshot this go around. And this makes no sense to me. This is like throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that James Gunn is attached to it. So I'm kind of curious to see what he's going to do with it, and which means that I'm sure the script will be fun. But I want to see what happens with the characters that were introduced originally. I want to see that continuity continue. I don't understand the reboot. I just really, really don't.
The only thing I can think of is because the original Suicide Squad did try to build into that bigger DC universe they were trying to build at that point, and obviously with Affleck out as Batman, and it seems like they're almost in some ways ignoring that, and it's like everything from Wonder Woman forward is what's legit.
But then you had the whole Joker thing too.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of tie yourself into Joker, so maybe because they're trying to cut ties with, you know, the current Batman and Joker stuff that they touched on that weren't going to happen now. I don't know.
Well, side note, if you bring that up, I did read today where they're saying Matt Reeves' Batman films will start filming later on this year. So they got to cast Batman first.
Yeah. I saw something, too, that Ben Affleck was going to be back for Justice League 2.
That's all clickbait. Ben Affleck is done. That's
what I was wondering. Yeah. Okay.
Something, though, that you brought up, we've got a Terminator name and release date for the newest Terminator film, which is, of course, bringing back Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger to their iconic roles. Mm-hmm. We've got it's Terminator Dark Fate releasing November 1st, 2019. How are you feeling on this, Kevin? Because right now I'm still kind of in that same feeling where I'm like with Toy Story. Did we really need this film?
Yeah, I've always wanted to see Linda Hamilton come back, you know? And, you know, I'm more excited about this than Toy Story. That's for sure. Oh, yeah,
I'll say that. I'm definitely more excited for this.
So seeing them both on the screen and this is being a direct sequel to Terminator 2, I'm all game. I mean, I'm not like John Wick excited or Avengers Endgame excited, but I think it'll, to borrow a phrase that I like to use from our good friend Blair, it'll be an interesting distraction.
There you go. I guess I have heard rumors that this movie is actually going to be finally the film where they're going to use it to maybe even reset the Terminator franchise at the end of it. But I'm curious. I need to see a trailer, I guess, is my big thing with this film, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm looking at the main poster they've been showing of the three women in it. The woman in the middle, I'm forgetting the actress's name. She's got these interesting scar marks that are patterned on her body, and I'm kind of curious how that's going to be because it's these scars that are on her aren't too precise to be like wounds.
Yeah, no.
It's almost like she is either, you know, part machine herself or experiments were done on her or something. It's very interesting. I'm very curious about this film. Who is the actress, by the way? The actress is Mackenzie Davis. That's who it is. To see Linda Hamilton come back, I'm more excited about that more than anything else. So, by the way, Mackenzie Davis was in Blade Runner 2049.
That's right.
As Mariette.
That's right.
And she was also Mindy Park in The Martian. And she was also in an episode of Black Mirror.
Very cool. Now, the next piece of news that you picked out, Kevin, this is something with Star Wars I am legitimately excited about. And that is, of course, the Game of Thrones creators. It's looking more and more like they might be doing Old Republic.
We still have to say this is rumor. But this was posted on MovieWeb.com by Ryan Scott today. And it says here that they have some new potential details on the next Star Wars movie. The future, at least on the big screen of the franchise, is a bit uncertain right now following the release of Episode 9 later this year. What we know for sure is that J.J. Abrams' conclusion to the new trilogy is being billed as the end of the Skywalker saga, meaning that whatever comes next will expand the franchise in a new direction. To that point, it sounds like the first entry of the Benioff and Weiss trilogy will do just that. This is the rumor that they're going to do an Old Republic style trilogy, which fans have been clamoring for a long time. I remember when they were going to do the TV show, I'm like, well, that would make a good TV show as well. But if they can actually get a trilogy off talking about the Old Republic, I sure hope this is true, man. And these guys, of course, with Game of Thrones behind them and under their belts, it just seems like a natural fit to kind of go back into the old school ways of Star Wars and have them do an Old Republic
thing. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when they were first announced as being working on a Star Wars project, I was like, oh, please let it be Old Republic. I think that was the majority of everybody's wish.
I hope, yeah, because those video games are great and the books too. And I'm hoping that they pull from either or of those. So I hope that they pull, I'm not saying go back and use these legends and build from them exactly, but at least pull some names and maybe some characters. That would be kind of cool.
Okay, let me ask you this, because we do have Celebration coming up in less than a month now. And the more I get this feeling, the more I think Disney and Lucasfilm are going to go all out this year at this Star Wars Celebration. I mean, you're going to have Mandalorian debut, Clone Wars season, a 7 finally coming out with the streaming service, obviously everything with Episode 9. Do you think they'd sneak in an announcement about this, especially considering that same weekend is the debut of the final season of Game of Thrones?
That would be interesting if they did do that. That would be fun.
Yeah,
that would be great if Benioff and Weiss were actually there as like a secret guest or something. You know, that would be awesome. That would get a lot of people excited and a good time to do that. Yeah.
Now, you also brought up something going back to, of course, the big story of the day, the Disney Fox merger. You're bringing attention to not only the fact that we have the original Star Wars trilogy coming with the Disney merger, and obviously Fantastic Four and X-Men, but there is a ton of other movie franchises that are coming aboard the Disney banner.
Yeah, in addition to the original trilogy, Star Wars trilogy video and theatrical distribution rights, Avatar is going to be underneath that umbrella. Die Hard, X-Men, Fantastic Four, as we've mentioned. Kingsman, Planet of the Apes, Alien, Predator, Independence Day, Fight Club, Home Alone, Night at the Museum, The Maze Runner movies, Ice Age movies, Red Sparrow, wondering why that was thrown in there, The Martian, Artemis, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Dr. Doolittle, Percy Jackson, and The Chronicles of Narnia, just to name a few.
Well, what I find funny is about that is, if you remember, Disney actually was the people who did initially the newest version of The Chronicles of Narnia. They did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So I think that's an interesting property to fall back under to them. But there's some major properties here. I'm very curious to see what Disney would do with things like Planet of the Apes and Independence Day.
I'm more interested in Alien and Predator. That's what I'm kind of curious about.
You know, I wonder now that they have all of this, if they add it to the Hollywood studios eventually. In Orlando, I would be curious to see how much of this they're going to add and how much of this product they're going to really push to the forefront.
Right.
So, yeah. And speaking of that, one of the more intriguing storylines coming out of this is the fate of the last two X-Men related movies that Fox did. Of course, we already know we have X-Men Dark Phoenix that's going to be hitting theaters in June, which a lot of people, I have to admit, the last trailer actually kind of looked impressive, but the problem is you can't get yourself to care about this movie.
What did?
X-Men Dark Phoenix, the last trailer the most recent trailer.
Really?
There were some things.
You think that looked impressive?
I thought it looked better than what I've seen from an X-Men movie in a while.
I'm going to disagree with you there.
But the problem is it looks like, we know it's a lame duck movie, but even more so of a lame duck is the New Mutants situation. Now, Kevin, I know you weren't real intrigued with this movie in the first place when the first trailer came out.
God, no. Yeah, they tried to do a horror thing with it, and yeah.
I've been intrigued by this film because I love the cast that's in this film. Especially you have Maisie Williams in it. And I've been intrigued because the horror angle they were trying to take, I think, was something akin back to when the New Mutants were first introduced. But it looks like if this movie even sees the light of day, and I think it will in one form or another, because I think Disney's going to be looking to beat off the bootleggers. I think the rumors are it's going to go to one of the streaming services Disney controls, whether it's Disney Plus or Hulu. And there are still rumors that Disney's trying to buy the last part of Hulu away from, I think it's Warner Brothers, to get full control of Hulu, because they want to turn Hulu into where they can put their more adult oriented material, because they want to keep Disney Plus family friendly. I think this would be interesting. I hope this movie does at least get out. I think it's an interesting comic book film. I would be curious to see what it turned into. And again, there is a very good cast in this, and I know they put in a lot of hard work. So I'd like for them to have the opportunity for this film to get out.
If this is heading straight to Disney's streaming service, though, that's basically demoting it, meaning that whatever test audience or the trailer reaction just is not making people excited about this.
Well, and this movie's gone through some notorious reshooting history already, so.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's at this point, it's a more of a morbid curiosity than anything.
Yeah.
So, and finally, Kevin, last week we talked about this. We got the running times for the first two episodes of the final season of Game of Thrones. Now we have the official run times for every episode. Of course, episode one and episode two run 54 and 58 minutes, respectively.
I thought we covered this already. Didn't we cover this
already? We talked about it, but we didn't have official run times for the remaining episodes. Every episode remaining will be over an hour and 20 minutes. The last three episodes will be an hour and 20 minutes on the dot. Episode three will be an hour and 22 minutes. Right call. I feel good about this. I feel like this is the right call.
Yeah, you have to get it at 1 hour, 20 minutes to consider it a movie, I guess.
Yeah. it's going to be quite interesting when the final season does come out on DVD and Blu-ray and things like that. as well.
Yeah. Only 6 episodes, man. But, you know, we'll get some extended ones there. So that's good, I guess.
Yeah. So
I'm curious which episode is going to be the big battle scene. Well,
said there's one where, like, the whole episode is nothing but one big battle.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean towards, like, episode 4 for that.
Yeah.
So, well, we shall see, but I'm excited. It's less than a month away.
Have you been doing your Game of Thrones rewatch, or you've been putting on the back
burner? It's kind of been on the back burner. I think what I'm going to have to do is just realize I'm just going to have to rewatch season 7 by itself to kind of just refresh my memory. But I've rewatched Game of Thrones several times, so it's pretty still fresh with me. But, you know, Kevin, speaking of watching things, I think we've at least watched a few interesting Netflix things of late.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's time to do a little buy it, stream it, or see it. Now, Netflix had a couple of really interesting original titles come out this week. One was a film and one was a anthology series. The film I have not had a chance to watch it. I do have every intent to watch it. I'm actually very excited about this. But you got the time to watch it, Kevin, and that was Triple Frontier.
Yes, I was curious about this film more because of the cast. It stars Ben Affleck, Oscar Isaac, Charlie Hunnam, Garrett Hedlund, and Pedro Pascal, who's currently starring in The Mandalorian for Star Wars. Garrett Hedlund, of course, you may know him from Tron. The new Tron movie, of course, Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy. And Oscar Isaac is Poe, you know, from a new Star Wars franchise. So I was really kind of curious about this film. It says that its loyalties are tested when 5 former Special Forces operatives reunite to steal a drug lord's fortune, unleashing a chain of unintended consequences. Have you seen the trailer for this?
I've seen the trailer is what sold me on this. I saw the initial trailer during the Super Bowl, and then they have a newer trailer out that's a little bit more intense. But it was, and just seeing that cast, I mean, you know, you have Affleck, you have Charlie Hunnam, who, if you didn't know him from perhaps Sons of Anarchy, you should remember him from Pacific Rim. Oscar Isaacs, of course, we all loved him as Apocalypse. And Garrett,
really?
I had to go there. I'm sorry.
You had to bring that up.
Garrett Hedlund, obviously Tron, but another movie I was always a big fan of him in was the movie 4 Brothers.
Oh, good movie. Yeah. Yeah. That was actually, I heard there might be doing a sequel to that too.
That would be very cool. That was a good movie.
Yeah. Didn't he die in that film?
Yeah,
though?
He did die in that movie.
Yeah. That's
but
right.
But this film looks absolutely crazy intense, Kevin.
Yes, it is. By the way, a little trivia there. Leonardo DiCaprio was in early talks to star in the beginning stage of this film's development, which I thought was kind of interesting. It was an interesting film. I actually did enjoy it. But I got to tell you, there was something – it's kind of like what I get when I watch almost every horror film. When most of the story is about what happens after they steal this drug lord's money. And they go to this house in South America, and they find that they basically get into this house that's just filled with millions and millions and millions of dollars that are hidden in the walls of this house, right? And they escape with it, but you're just waiting for the shoe to drop of when the you-know-what hits the fan and
yeah,
stuff
exactly.
Starts to go extremely wrong. And there's several stages of that happens when they try to get away with this, with the money. And, it's interesting because you're it's a little stressful to watch for that reason, but it's enthralling. And it's a very interesting story to see what happens. And then, you know, their own friendships are tested as well when they have to make vital decisions. And you're wondering, like, towards the end, who's going to survive this? And I don't want to give anything away, but stuff happens. But what's interesting is at the very end, there is a tease that if they wanted to make a sequel to this, because stuff isn't sewn up nice and neatly. There's still money left over. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Not everyone survives.
So what you're saying is there could be a quadruple frontier.
I don't quite understand the name of the movie. I don't, if they're referring to the different landscapes and stuff, maybe that's probably why, but I haven't gone into a Google search of why this movie's called Triple Frontier. I didn't quite get that unless I missed a reference in the film. I don't know. What's also been interesting about this, just so you Star Wars fans are curious, is that Oscar Isaacs has been on a press tour for this. And every time he's asked about this, someone always asks him Star Wars questions. And I know Rebel Force Radio covered that recently, if you want to check out those, because they took some sound clips from talking about episode 9.
Okay, I have a question for you about this movie, because I think this is a really big movie for Netflix, especially with the Disney-Fox deal closing, and we know what's coming down here in just a few months for Netflix, where they're going to lose a bunch of stuff. And obviously Amazon streaming is really putting a lot of pressure on of late, too. I think Netflix is... niche heading forward is a lot of their original programming, like Triple Frontier. Do you think this is a good step in the right direction for Netflix as far as their original programming goes and their original films?
Definitely, especially the star power. If you get the stars to do this, because I don't think Netflix necessarily is Netflix was kind of like the step down. If your movie couldn't make it on the big screen, then you'll probably get it on Netflix. You know how it was kind of perceived as that a little bit. I think it's going beyond that now, and I think that's a good thing. A movie like Triple Frontier, I could definitely have seen a theatric release, but now that Netflix is so big and the production value that they put into their movies and specials is at the point right now where I think it's strong enough to carry these big stars on Netflix. You know, like I'm excited about this. I want to give a shout out this Friday night. Motley Crue's The Dirt, based on their infamous book that came out in 2000, I think it was, is coming out. And that's been shopped for a long time, and Netflix picked that up. And I think that's going to be a great way to showcase that, because Netflix can take some chances. And I disagree with Steven Spielberg. I think Netflix films should be available for Oscar. I see his point. He wants people to go out and see movies in the theater. This would have been a film I would have seen in the theater too, but it's nice to know I can watch it in the comfort of my own home.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't the only thing Netflix had come out this week that was original programming. And this is something that I kind of snuck up on me. I didn't know it was even coming until I saw a trailer for it online, like just a few days before it came out. And especially with my love of animation. And I'm a huge fan of anthology shows, Kevin. I've always loved a good anthology show because you don't get caught up into one story, and you have that chance to see different perspectives and different types of stories. And in this case, we have something that we've talked about. It's kind of out of the spirit of heavy metal, and that is Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know what heavy metal is, it started out as an adult illustrated fantasy magazine in 1977, I think was the first issue, which I do have a copy of, by the way. And it had a collection of artist stories in there, and they weren't all tied together. They're all separate stories. And adult illustrated for obvious reasons, because there was nudity and language and violence and those things. And it was a great way for those artists at the time. And then, of course, it all culminated into the original heavy metal movie that came out. I think it was at 79?
I believe 79.
80? Yeah, I think it was. Which you and I both love, and we're looking to do a Couch Potato Theater on it. And stories from the magazine were brought to life in that movie. And this kind of had that same type of feel, because this series is not for kids, man, for obvious reasons. There's nudity in it. There's language in there. There's violence in there. And so it kind of gave us that kind of heavy metal brought to the television screen feel, would you say?
Yeah, without a doubt. And full disclosure at this point, neither Kevin or I have had a chance to watch all the episodes in this. I'm farther along, Kevin, because I'll admit it. I started watching this and I got sucked in. And the great thing about this is each story, I think the longest story I've come across now is about 15 minutes long.
Yeah, they're not that long. I just started episode 4, which is called Suits, but I've seen the first three, Sunny's Edge, Three Robots, and The Witness. But I am going to check out the rest in due time. But you're a little bit farther than I am.
Yeah,
right?
I am through episode Luck or Zima Blue, and there's four episodes remaining after that. But I kind of want to. One of the things I really like about this, especially for animation styles, is it uses some very different types of animation. You have some classic, like you would maybe expect to see in out of a Final Fantasy type film or something like that, like with Sunny's Edge, as well as Beyond the Aquila Rift or Shapeshifters. But you also have some different styles of animation too, as far as The Witness, which I think of all of them is probably the most out there of the stories that I've seen.
Animation was good on that one, man. I'll tell you. But yeah, that was a little creepy, but yeah. I thought it was good though.
But they also have, and the stories have some different styles. You have some mecha type stories. You have some horror stories like Sucker of Souls.
Can I the episode on the episode description on these is very brief. Do you mind if I read those real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
At least a few of them. So number one's called Sunny's Edge. In the underground world of beastie fight, Sunny is unbeatable as long as she keeps her edge. Three Robots, episode two, long after the fall of humanity, three robots embark on a sightseeing tour of post-apocalyptic city. The one that you spoke of, The Witness, after seeing a brutal murder, a woman flees from the killer through the streets of a surreal city. Suits, a community of farmers uses their homeland mechs to defend their families from an alien invasion. Sucker of Souls, unleashed by an archaeological dig, a bloodthirsty demon battles a team of mercenaries armed with cats. When the yogurt took over, after scientists accidentally breed super intelligent yogurt, it soon hungers for world domination.
And I'm just going to say, this was probably the most silly of all of the ones that they've done. And it's one of the shortest as well.
This is the one you liked, Beyond the Aquila Rift. Awakening after traveling light years off course, a ship's crew struggles to discover how far they've come. Good Hunting, the son of a spirit hunter forges a bond with a shape-shifting Huli Jin.
Yeah.
I'm
not sure what that means. It's a Japanese spirit. This one was also outstanding. This was probably one of my top three for this series so far.
The Dump, Ugly Dave calls the garbage dump home, and he's not about to let some city slicker take it away from him. This one looks interesting. Shapeshifters, deep in Afghanistan, two Marines with supernatural powers face a threat from one of their own kind. Helping Hand, stranded in orbit, an astronaut must choose between life and limb before her oxygen runs out. Fish Night, after their car breaks down in the desert, two salesmen take a dreamlike voyage to the dawn of time. Lucky 13, after a dropship, Lucky 13 lost two crews. No pilot would fly her, but rookies don't get a choice. Zima Blue, a renowned artist, Zima recounts his mysterious past and rise to fame before unveiling his final work. Blind Spot, a gang of cyborg thieves stage a high-speed heist of heavily armored convoy. Ice Age, a young couple moves into an apartment and finds a lost civilization inside her antique freezer. And we got two more here. Alternate Histories, want to see Hitler die in a variety of comical, fantastic ways? Now you can. Welcome to Multiversity. And second and the last one, which sounds interesting, The Secret War. Elite units of the Red Army fight an unholy evil deep in the ancient forests of Siberia. So it looks like that's a total of 18 episodes.
Yeah, and like I said, of these 18 episodes, granted I've got four left. I've seen 14 of the 18. I can easily say I found at least 10 of these to be absolutely outstanding and enjoyable.
Cool.
So I really hope this does well enough to warrant a second season of this show. And I'll be honest with you, there's some of these things and this is kind of one of the fun things with an anthology series if it gets popular. It happened with Amazing Stories, Kevin. Do you remember the episode of Amazing Stories, Family Dog? The animated?
Which one?
That was about the little animated dog that the... It was quite popular. It actually got spun off into its own, where everything was through everything in the episode was through the eyes of this little dog.
I am having trouble remembering.
But I remember it because it actually got spun off into its own show for like a season on like USA Network or something like that. And there's a couple of these I would love to see a chance to get spun off into their own series as well. if you're an animation fan or you're a fan of science fiction and anthology, and like I said, there's sci-fi feel episodes, there's horror feel episodes, there's very intense episodes, there's some comedy episodes, has a bit of everything, and it's incredibly well done, and a lot of really good voice acting talent. Not necessarily names you're going to know of as far as Hollywood actors, but people who have been on the voice acting circuit, doing anime, doing different cartoons on Cartoon Network and things like that. Very strong cast of voice actors.
Yeah. I got to say, the animation has been definitely pretty damn good, to be honest with you. It's been quite impressive, actually. So for I'm going to say stream it definitely for both of these, because that's where you can find it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. For me, I would say, you know, with Love, Death, and Robots, if they ever put this out in this collection you could buy, I would probably buy it.
Quick coming attractions thing. Are you going to see any of these movies coming out this weekend on the theater? There's Us. You know, that's the new, Peele's film, I guess.
Jordan Peele's. I have a question about Us, Kevin, real quick. You know, since Michael Morris and Alex Autry seem to call themselves the real co-hosts, does that mean they're Us?
Yes, the creepy versions of Us.
If they start running around with pairs of gold scissors, I'm never letting him on the show again.
Yeah, I have no interest in wanting to see it. It looks too scary. Have you seen this Captive State movie? Have you heard about this?
I've heard about this, and we had a little.
Why is it not getting enough trailers and stuff out there?
I believe we talked about this off the mic. This feels like a Netflix film.
Because it says it's set in Chicago neighborhood nearly a decade after an occupation of an extraterrestrial force. Captive State explores the lives of both sides of the conflict, the collaborators and the dissidents. And it stars John Goodman, Vera Farmiga, D.B. Sweeney, Kevin Dunn, Alan Ruck. There's a bunch of other names here.
Yeah, it's a really good cast in this film. This film has kind of just slipped under the radar. This might be something, if I have the time, that might be what I go check out this weekend.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. Anyway, all right.
So, well, with that, we're going to take a quick break and let you hear about all the other great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And Kevin and I will be back to talk some cult classics and guilty pleasures.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal Podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
So, you got on me last week, Kevin. You said I didn't work hard enough on my pick.
No, you did not. You did not.
I, considering what your pick is this week, I would take issue.
I was wondering if you were going to call me on that after I just did the same thing last week.
Well, before we get to this week's picks, let's discuss the Raider Nerd poll and the results of what was cult classic or guilty pleasure from last week. And Kevin, we'll start with your pick first, which was the movie Free Jack. I mean, in any movie that has Mick Jagger in it, it's got to be a cult classic, right?
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was. It was, you know, that was the 1992 film, of course, with Mick Jagger and Emilio Estevez and Anthony Hopkins. And this kind of got what I expected. It wasn't a blowout. Kind of close. It was almost 50-50, not exactly, but we had cult classic at 44%. But as I expected, Guilty Pleasure won out with 56% of the votes. That didn't surprise me. What about you?
No, it didn't surprise me either. To be honest with you, I remember this movie. It's definitely feels more of a guilty pleasure because I don't think there was anything that was that memorable about this movie when it was all said and done that really made it stand out completely.
Yeah, you know, it's still one I gravitate towards more, you know, just because I like the concept of them trying to, you know, go back in time and steal this guy's body when he was supposed to have been killed. And I thought the concept was kind of cool, you know, and it was kind of nice to see what, you know, either LA or the area was going to look like in 2006 or something funny.
Don't,
like
don't that. You love it when the movies are like years that we've lived through now?
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, and of course, you know, for me, it was about seeing Mick Jagger doing an acting role. And, you know, he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. Yeah. You know, he's still enjoyable and stuff. But, yeah, so that kind of went the way that I wanted, you know. But that's what's fun about this segment is that you get to pick these weird films that maybe, you know, not necessarily, you know, have stood the test of time. Yeah.
Well, and then, of course, we apparently have Kyle's phoned-it-in pick of the week.
Yes, it was your pick of Crawl, which I called was going to be a landslide. Cult wins at cult classic at 83% and guilty pleasure at 17%.
Okay, I have one question for you because I thought about this during the week, Kevin. Is Crawl a cult classic without the glaive?
No one's watching that film without the glaive or talking about it without the glaive. Come on. The glaive.
One of the greatest weapons in movie history.
Yeah. I mean, but you know what? That movie had a lot of stuff going for it, too. I was rewatching it, and the costumes were great. The sets were great. The only thing that maybe it's a little short on is maybe the story itself to a certain degree. But I think the visuals, the props, in the costumes and stuff, I still think kind of hold up. Maybe some of the acting in it too isn't that great.
Wait, wait, I'm gonna pass you the flame. That was bad.
But I mean, you know, it's you know, at least our friends, you know, we all look fondly back on this film, and that's why I knew it was gonna. Is definitely going to win the cult classic vote. So,
interesting side note. One of the things I always remember about this movie is actually how I found out about this movie and got me interested in it. Way back in the day on Nickelodeon, Leonard Nimoy used to host a series called Lights, Camera, Action, and they would go into different science fiction type movies and talk about the effects and different things like that. And I remember them because they put a special focus on the scene where they were with the Clydesdales, where they were trying to mount the Clydesdales to get to the Beast's castle, and they mm-hmm. did a whole behind the scenes thing on that I found quite interesting, and it was one of the things that sold me on really wanting to see that film.
Right. Yep. So,
well, let's get to this week's picks, and I will start.
I like how you're about to give me crap for my pick, but I got to do the same for yours.
Well, no, I will start. I will start because I think I put some thought into this week's pick, Kevin. Because this one, I think, really...
Hold on. Okay, but you have to realize, though, anything that came after number two immediately falls into a certain category. But I love your pick because it's my favorite of the ones that came out after episode or number two.
Okay. Well, and people are saying, well, number two, what came out after number two? Well, my pick is the third film in what would we call this? The 90s, 2000 Batman films?
Yes. Which, yes. After the Tim Burton, Michael Keaton one and two, there was what? How many? Three that came out.
Two.
Was it three?
Two.
Or is it two more that came
this,
out?
This okay. one and, of course.
Could we just call this the Schumacher trilogy or whatever it's called?
Yeah, the Schumacher double feature. And yes. That is, of course, we are talking about, no, not Batman and Robin. We are talking about Batman Forever. And of course, the big thing of the
1995,
yep, we were coming,
which falls under the 20-year mark.
Yes. the big thing, of course, with this film was the replacement of Michael Keaton as Batman, replaced by Val Kilmer. Now, I have to say, I enjoyed Val Kilmer as Batman in this film. I thought he made a very good Bruce Wayne as well.
I would agree with you. Val Kilmer was at the tail end of his stardom there, doing, you know, like he had Tombstone prior. He did The Doors, you know, so he was still, you know, still in his prime, let's say. And I enjoyed it when I heard that he was cast. I was actually really excited.
Yeah, the cast overall was really exciting about this because you had Tommy Lee Jones as Harvey Dent, Two-Face. You had Jim Carrey as Edward Nygma, the Riddler. You had Nicole Kidman with one of the classic Joel Schumacher names, Dr. Chase Meridian. Come on now. of course, and Chris O'Donnell coming in as Dick Grayson and Robin. Of course, and the one returning character, Michael Goh, as still the best Alfred, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Michael Goh. And then we had Drew Barrymore as Sugar and Debbie Mazar as Spice.
Yes. Now,
oh, and I forgot that Rene Auberjonois, yes, otherwise known as Odo on DS9, was Dr. Burton.
Yes. Now, I'm going to say this about Batman Forever. We didn't get full crazy on Schumacher in this film. We got maybe about 50% because he did let Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey just go way over the top.
This is what makes this movie stand apart from Batman and Robin. We had two really good actors doing good villains that work together. Both of these guys were great. I think that Jim Carrey as the Riddler, though, was probably better. And I think this was tailor-made for him at that time. And I think he excelled at it. He was entertaining. And I like the introduction of Chris O'Donnell too. I thought that was good, but you know, and I thought the chemistry between Val Kilmer and Nicole Kidman was good as well.
And Nicole Kidman looking absolutely gorgeous as a redhead in this film really helped.
Oh yes. Yes.
I think the thing for me that always kind of turned me off on this film a little bit was Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face, because really Two-Face done in The Dark Knight was done absolutely perfect by Aaron Eckhart, and how the character should have been.
My only issue with that, though, is we didn't get enough of him as Two-Face.
No, I agree with you there, but that portrayal, compared to this kind of crazy, insane, over-the-top Two-Face, that kind of was like, it felt like he was just trying to do two types of Joker characters, making these both of these characters so over-the-top. You can get away with that with the Riddler a little bit and Jim Carrey, but Tommy Lee Jones in that kind of role, and with using Two-Faces, that just didn't feel right.
Well, he was off his Oscar win, too, from The Fugitive as well.
So
you had this great cast of actors in their prime brought together to do this kind of over-the-top comic book film.
Yeah.
You know?
So definitely not the worst of the Batman films. I would put this kind of in – I would actually probably put this – I think I enjoyed this more than Batman Returns as far as – overall.
So did I. I did too. People are not, you're probably going to go crazy, but I enjoyed this more than Batman too.
I think that obviously Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns was absolutely outstanding, and Michael Keaton was great as Batman. But I think the problem I had with Batman Returns is it went to Tim Burton.
Yes, I would agree with you there. To Tim Burton, yes.
You know, so yeah.
I like the villains in this one a little bit better, I guess.
Yeah. I think it goes to show you with what I'll call this four movie block of Batman films, the odd numbers are definitely much better than the even numbers.
Yeah, but you know, I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to disagree. They like Batman 2 more than.
Oh yeah, I agree.
I think we're in the minority.
Oh no, I agree. you know what?
Dude, this is going to, I have to call you on this one. This is going to be guilty pleasure. It's going to be
guilty pleasure. Yes, I mean, even I'm leaning guilty pleasure, but I do think it's going to be a little bit closer than Crawl.
Really? That'll be interesting to see, because I think it's going to be around the same.
I don't think it's going to be the case. But however, your choice of films this week is going to be just as much of a runaway as Crawl was, Kevin.
But in the opposite
direction. Oh, no. I think it's going to be just like Crawl. It's going to be a cult classic. Runaway, hands down, without even question.
Yes, my pick is the 1989 classic or guilty pleasure, UHF.
We've got it all on UHF.
Yes, Weird Al Yankovic. And by the way, before I forget, I want to give a little shout out to our American sci-fi classic Dragon Con track friends, that they're going to be doing at Dragon Con this year. There is going to be a UHF panel, so make sure you check that out and bring your spatulas. I wonder if they want me to bring the Badger.
I'll bring a fire hose.
You know, I love this film. An unemployed visionary becomes the manager of a local public station. The station becomes a success with all sorts of hilarious sight gags and wacky humor. Of course, starring other people like Victoria Jackson, Kevin McCarthy, Michael Richards from Seinfeld fame. Bunch of other ones here, too. Fran Dresser's in this film. So, yeah, this movie's so silly. It's so much fun, though. All of the different skits and the weird programming that they put on there. You know, what's his name's Wild Kingdom that's in his apartment? What was his name?
I can't think of
something
that.
Wild Kingdom.
Come on, Kevin. The selling the point of this movie is the general love everybody has for Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't do more comedies. You know, I'm glad he at least did this one. I know he's probably been, you know, he's probably done some other stuff too, film wise. But this, you know, we all love him for his music, but I thought he was actually pretty darn good in this film.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you ever want a fun parody of UHF, of one of the main scenes from UHF, look up.
Hold on. What scene are we referring to?
The fire hose scene.
Okay, yes.
Look up the old classic show, Attack of the Show, on YouTube, and look up Attack of the Show UHF, because something happens with the fire hose and Kevin Pereira and Sarah Underwood, and it is one of the greatest live moments in television history. Kevin's looking it up now.
Oh, sorry. I got distracted. I was going on to YouTube for some reason.
I said Sarah Underwood and Kevin got distracted.
So as much as I think your pick of Batman Forever is going to be a landslide for guilty pleasure, you're thinking it's going to be a landslide for UHF to be a cult classic, correct?
I think this film is so beloved, and I think the Weird Al Yankovic fandom is so strong that I don't see how anybody could call this film a guilty pleasure, because who's really ashamed of being a Weird Al fan, Kevin?
No one is. And one thing I did want to mention that he has a relationship with the 501st, too, because obviously they like to bring the 501st on when he does a Star Wars parody. And he's back on tour this year, I think, too. He's still relevant as he always has been. And he's found a wonderful little niche in music history. And I love the fact that UHF, he's also found a niche in film history. I never get tired of watching this. It was a great collection of parodies he did in this with a great cast. And it was just a fun film. And I do think it's going to fall under a cult classic, but I'm kind of curious to see if people are going to say otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But with that, it's been a fun episode, Kevin. We've had some interesting things. You know, I was looking at the calendar. April is, we talked about this a little bit. We got the summer movie season's kicking into full gear. We've got amazing happenings in fandom. The ball is already rolling. I think the fandom summer season is here right now, and we're only in middle of March.
Yeah, we got Shazam coming up in a couple of weeks, right? Correct,
the 8th of April.
Yeah, looking forward to that, actually.
I just saw where the kid who plays the young Billy Batson is going to be at Dragon Con, too.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I'm really curious about that. April's, like I said, April's the new May, or is March the new April?
I do have one quick question for you. If for some reason Diamond Huntsal shows up at Dragon Con as part of Shazam, are you going to ask him about his 90210 cameo?
Is he in Shazam?
He is the wizard Shazam.
Ah, interesting. Damn right I'll be asking him about that. Most deaf, yes.
Well, with that, just remember, at the time we're recording this, Tuesday, March 19th, at the stroke of midnight, Disney owns us all. So in the meantime, Kevin, I'm going to go try to find my local UHF channel and watch a little television.
For some reason, I have the urge to watch Batman Forever.
Yeah, I can understand why.
But by the way, I did watch a few more episodes of 90210. I didn't go as far as you, sir, but I did see episode 3, which Dylan McKay was introduced in. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, with that, we're going to get out of here. Thank you for listening. And as always, respect each other and enjoy your fandoms.